You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 11th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the condom machine at Whiskey Ted's Truck Stop and Wedding Chapel, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Ew, indeed. Ew. I feel icky and sticky. I don't want to.
Did Ted Cruz just announce that his wife has herpes? I mean, it's like he was talking about no one's trying to take away contraception. Everybody can get a condom.
Right.
From a vending machine in a bathroom.
Because that's how you did it. Where did you go to school again? Harvard or Princeton? Yeah. Yeah. Right down the hall in the men's room, you could get, you know, the ribbed ones for her pleasure.
Uh-huh. Gross.
And the spiky ones for a quarter. You took them for a quarter.
I don't want to think about Ted Cruz and condoms, but no. He made all the old people in the town hall giggle. So, you know.
And he's going to win Iowa.
Maybe. He's a menace. Anyway.
Now that Steve King has backed him.
Has Steve King endorsed Ted Cruz?
Yes, he has.
Ew.
Yeah.
I don't know future what's grosser now.
Future Secretary of State Steve King. Man, it just gets worse.
Well,
and worse.
I did hear that interview that he gave with on Inners about, you know, well, you know, if you're a Muslim, then you're a radical terrorist just because of your religion. But if you're shooting up Planned Parenthood clinic, that doesn't have nothing to do with Christianity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes around and around. And this is just one more week in the spin cycle.
I want people to put this week in perspective, because this, again, I almost say this every week now, hard week. Huh? Donald Trump, as one of my colleagues pointed out, you know, Godwin's law is now just erased. when the leading candidate for the Republican Party starts talking about border walls based on religion, right?
Getting people out
Godwin's
of the country.
Law, apparently, yeah. So. Well, I really hate using Hitler motifs anyway.
It's fascism. And fascism,
yeah, it is fascism.
Plus, you know, genocidal white supremacy equals Hitler. But there's lots of fascists around the world and always have been.
And Hitler's overused, and I just don't like putting up Hitler cartoons because I think that's just kind of it's overdone.
That's why I photoshopped Mussolini.
Mussolini works, actually, as somebody who's just got this tremendous ego and personality, the cult of personality. But I did want to put some of this in perspective and get a deep breath. get a deep breath back, because Donald Trump made these comments in South Carolina.
Right.
And South Carolina is an exceptional state, to put it mildly.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize till this morning that Lee Atwater was actually born in South Carolina, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
South Carolina politics is the dirtiest it is in any state in the union. It is filthy, dirty politics in South Carolina.
Yep.
And this past week and a half or so, there have been stories about Marco Rubio having a mistress somewhere. And the people that are sort of in the know about that on my email stream said, oh, yeah, but that's coming out of South Carolina. Take a big scoop of salt with that, because really, it's you don't know when dirt comes out of South Carolina. Remember, South Carolina is where John McCain was, you know, there were push polls about, would you be mad if John McCain had a black baby out there?
Illegitimate
black bastard child when he'd adopted a daughter from Bangladesh.
Bangladesh. And by the way, I hear that every time he hears the word gook, he goes mad because he's never been recovered. Yeah, it's the state where the Bush machine destroyed John McCain.
Right.
And John McCain went back, you know, crawled back to his seat and ended up kissing George Bush's ass for eight years.
Yep. And then was the nominee.
Yeah.
And won South Carolina. You know, President McCain won South Carolina in 2008.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
President Romney won South Carolina in 2012.
Yeah.
And so the Republican Party of South Carolina, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, White supremacists, you think? Of course they're going to have a standing O for anything that says keep the brown people out. So that's number one. Number two is, as I said on email as well, this past couple days was, it's pretty clear that Reince Priebus's 128 baud fax machine was going nonstop, sending out the message that we aren't like this as Republicans, because everyone from Dick Cheney on down rejected this, even though, I mean, it was a headline in our local paper that Governor Rauner, you know, didn't agree with Trump, right? But he's one of the governors who said we're not letting refugees in.
Right, exactly. It's simply applying the logic that all of those governors and all the Republicans have already said that, you know, there is something inherently racially in the blood, dangerous, letting
about
people,
Syrians, about
letting those
Muslims,
people into this country.
Yep.
And you can never tell. With those people, you can never tell.
Those
well, okay.
People. Yep.
Those then why are Syrian Muslims more dangerous than Indonesian Muslims?
Or Saudi Muslims. Yep.
Saudi Muslims.
Yep.
If it's in the blood, if it's just who they are, then follow the logic of your position to its logical conclusion. Mm-hmm. And you end up with Donald Trump.
Yep.
And that's why right-wing hate radio has been backing him to the hill.
Well, tell me about that, because you were sampling some of that,
well,
right?
I think it was Rachel Maddow or Chris Hayes, who are the last two tiny little archipelago of liberalism on Fox Light, which is now MSNBC's Fox Light, who did a smash cut of all of the conservative talk radio people, Mark Levin, Laura Ingraham, Rush Limbaugh, who were either, thank God that Donald Trump is honest enough to talk about these issues. I might disagree with, you know, where he's taking it, but, you know, no one else is going to talk honestly about Islamic, you know, radical Islamic terrorism and infiltration into this country than Donald Trump. So right-wing radio just backed him to the hilt, and will continue to do so because this is their audience.
Yeah.
And the more, and they've set themselves up a perfect trap because I must once again break Godwin's law. It was either someone once said a Jew is anyone Hitler says is a Jew.
Ah.
Or a Jew is anyone Goebbels says is a Jew. You know, it is the right-wing talk radio machine, the hate machine, has arrogated to itself and been given the power to designate who the real conservatives are, who real Republicans are. And now that power is completely run amok because they can just look at Dick Cheney and declare him a rhino.
Yeah.
And pig people, and I'm sorry, but let's call them who they are. These are fascists. These are American fascists. Will fall right into line. And suddenly Dick Cheney.
Found one on, I mean, they're all over Twitter, but one tweet in particular jumped out at me yesterday, a tweet to Glenn Beck saying, if you had smashed down Obama when you had the chance.
Exactly. And it's never, there is never going to come a moment of self-reflection.
Yeah.
When, you know, it took the absolute military destruction of Germany to force the German people to look at themselves and see what they had become. Mm-hmm. There is never, and Republicans will be defeated electorally, and they will gradually demographically be purged from the roles. They'll stop being a political force in X number of years to be replaced by something, you know, slightly less horrible. But they are, there's never going to come a moment of self-reflection for them because they can't. They cannot look at themselves and see who they are. Instead, they have a perfect little system where it's always the same two-step. It's not really happening. And then when it becomes unbelievably clear, no longer deniable that it's happening, it's a liberal's fault or you're not really a conservative. So Iraq was going great, right up until Barack Obama stabbed us in the back on purpose. He meant to lose our all to the Muslims. Well, that's straight out of, you know, that's the National Socialist playbook. You know, the
and that's Carla Fiorina, too.
Hmm?
Absolutely caught lying to the point where the mainstream media cannot deny that she's lying because they cannot find the video, right?
Right.
The Planned Parenthood video. And then she says, well, this is what the left always does.
Yes.
And Donald Trump has done a very good job of changing the subject.
Absolutely.
From his, you know, we're not talking about New Jersey anymore. We're not talking about Muslims in New Jersey cheering. That's off the conversation totally.
It's just part of the background now. It's And conservatives will remember that as true in the future.
Yep.
It will remember that it happened because Donald Trump said it happened, and he said it 19 times. And again, the pivot is now is no longer even hidden anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the gears of the hate machine are out in public now for anyone to see. And that's what makes now different, because one of my favorite people, Ben Dominick. You mind if I talk about him for just a hot minute?
No, go right ahead.
Ben Dominick was a right-wing hack, you know, a right-wing blogger who called, Coretta Scott King a communist,
mm-hmm.
among other many, many, many shitty, awful, terrible things he has done. He was hired for 3 days by the Washington Post as their blogger because they wanted to get down with the kid, down with the youth. So they hired him as a blogger, and then they discovered he was a plagiarist, and they fired his ass. But Ben Dominick has a secret weapon. He's friends with Chris Hayes. And so Chris Hayes does for Ben Dominick what David Gregor used to do for Newt Gingrich, yes. which is perpetually rehabilitating. You know, no matter how badly he fucks up, no matter what shit he says on the side, no matter the fact that he's pulling a check, he draws a paycheck from a climate denial shithouse called the Heartland Institute. And Chris Hayes is a big proponent of climate change honesty and calling people out who do that for a living. Nonetheless, for some inexplicable reason, Ben Dominick just keeps getting cycled through the MSNBC machine. He keeps finding a chair at every table. Until last week, he was on Face the Nation. He's now an A-lister, Ben is. Good old Ben is. And what did Ben Dominick write last week? He pivoted from step one to step two because for 30 years, we've been playing the game that there's no real threat from the right. They're not really fascists. They're not really hateful. They're not really crazy. They're not. That's a few fringe lunatics. That's been David Brooks' entire shtick for years. And Cokie Roberts and Peggy Noonan and the rest of the, you know, desiccated waxworks figurines who make up the pundit class in this country. Lie, la, lie, la, lie, la, lie, la, lie. Well, this was the month when it turned out liberals have been right all along. In fact, there's a New Republic article that says basically liberals are right all along.
Mm-hmm.
The front page of the New York Times or the editorial section of the New York Times. Yep, they're fascists, all right. We can point to them and say that. So,
and there's historical content. The New York Times today, mm-hmm. I mean, the front page of the New York Times article was about gun control. Something we're not talking about 3 days later, by the way. We're now talking about immigration instead.
It's gone.
But the editorial, we're recording on Thursday, the editorial today is about, look, you can resist and denounce Donald Trump all you want, but this has been going on in the Republican Party for decades. And by the way, none of the Republican candidates have, as of this writing, said that they won't support Donald Trump if he's the Republican nominee. Now, Bob Dole told Andrea Mitchell that he could not foresee voting for Donald Trump, and he actually said that if Ted Cruz was the nominee, he would sleep in that mm-hmm. day, on Election Day. The hatred for Ted Cruz in official Washington is deep and wide
mm-hmm.
And personal, much more personal than Donald Trump.
But think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
The New York Times is saying, yeah, they're fascists. They've been fascists for years. This is a deep and long-standing...
Where has the New York Times been?
Well, A, they have been hiring people like Bill Kristol
and David Brooks.
Dave Brooks.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ross Douthat. Paying them enormous salaries mm-hmm. to do what they now admit was just lying
yeah.
for year after year after year, just lying and lying. There's not really there, nothing really there. And the other side is they have not been hiring people like me who have been saying, I mean, this is the frustrating part of getting emails constantly, which I really do appreciate. And I read mm-hmm. them all saying, you should check this article out. It's awesome.
It went full drift glass. Look at this. It finally went full drift glass. Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, I look at them and they are really good. And they are things I was writing 10 years ago.
2005, article. I think what was the one that you reposted today? Was that 2008?
That was 2008.
And you didn't edit one word of that post.
Not a word of it. And I could not beg, borrow, or steal a freelance gig for sandwiches anywhere in the media.
And this is why I want to bring in Ben Shapiro to this conversation.
If
you don't mind.
Let me loop back to Ben Dominick just for a second.
Uh-huh.
Because Ben Dominick has been wrong all this time.
Mm-hmm.
But he's friends. He's got friends in high places. He's friends with Ezra Klein, who kept putting him on MSNBC when Ezra was there. He's friends with Chris Hayes, who keeps putting him on television despite the fact that he's a hack. He has it just an open chair for him on the Sunday shows all day long. So what does Chris Hayes, who is a good liberal, finally say, look, this has gotten stupid. This is ridiculous. He really got pissed off. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. He said, you know what? Donald Trump is real. The conservative fascism underneath him is real. They're not making this stuff up. This is actually really, truly happening. He said, but conservatives are so desperate to take no responsibility for that. Some are even blaming Barack Obama for the rise of Donald Trump.
Which is exactly what Ben Dominic was doing.
Which is exactly what Ben Dominic did last week or this week in whatever the hell shit rag he writes for. Now, do you think Chris Hayes is ever going to point to his good friend Ben Dominic and say, you're the problem? Oh, fuck no.
Yeah.
Because there is a club and you're not in it. Here's what I know is true. Ben Dominic will go right on having a wonderful career. A few years ago, he was a little down on his luck, so they invented the Sammy Awards for him so the Breitbart people could give him a check for $10,000 for his good work fighting liberalism. So Ben Dominic the Ben Dominics of the world will always find a job at the Washington Post or on MSNBC or some other wingnut welfare program. On the other side, there is absolutely no infrastructure or support at all for liberals who have been telling the truth plainly and clearly all along, and there never will be.
Yeah.
And that is the great – and what's happening right now, this particular week or this particular month, this is what's so fascinating is all of the mainstream Beltway articles are either, holy shit, there's a bunch of Republicans in the Republican Party, or where the hell have you been? They've been here all along. How dare you feign surprise? It's been there forever, which is the New York Times article. My question is – how the hell is it? I hate to be really crude about this. How the hell is it I don't have a job doing this?
You know, I can tell you why.
Once a month.
I can tell you why. The answer is money. And you and I have had entire podcasts devoted to, you know, show me the money. Where is the money? And this is where Ben Shapiro comes in, because Ben Shapiro spoke. He spoke at a high school called the Otay Ranch High School, which is outside of San Diego. He was invited to speak, and some of the teachers at that high school were upset that he was invited to speak, but he signed on to the school's rules about what you can say at assemblies. You can't have sexual content, you can't have violent content, you can't have, you know, and basically this, he told the school, this speech I'm going to give is going to be about the conservative perspective and how students should open their minds to the conservative perspective. Sure. So they had him come. They called an assembly. The students are sitting in the gym. And you only read about this right now on right-wing media because the administrator of that school stopped the speech and dismissed the students. And over half the students left the speech because Ben Shapiro said, if you're permanently poor, it's your fault. That the permanently poor in this country suck at money. Quote. That's a quote. Suck at money. And so it's really a waste to throw money at the permanently poor because they suck at money. And, of course, like many high schools around the country, Otay Ranch High School outside San Diego is majority free lunch. You know, we have 22% of the children in this country are in poverty right now, and public school students are overwhelmingly getting free lunch, you know, getting support services for being at risk because of poverty, because they come from single parent households, because. So the administrator stopped the speech because he had just insulted 60% of the students sitting in that room.
Well, hopefully he had insulted all of them.
Well, hopefully he had.
Yeah.
But, you know, to say something like, if you're permanently poor, it's your fault. And then he said, well, you know, there are people that are temporarily poor.
But your parents are
We know the difference between a permanently poor person and a temporarily poor person, right? Okay.
It's melanin.
But, you know, exactly. Here's the deal. What made it so palatable for this school to have Ben Dominic come and Ben Shapiro come and speak for them is he spoke to them for free.
Right.
Traveled for free, got to the school for free, and spoke, you know, at no cost to the school system. Mm-hmm. He did that because his speaking tour is sponsored by Young America's Foundation, which is the Koch brothers. Young America's Foundation, by the way, also has a spring break event. Young America's Foundation also sponsors a spring break getaway at the Reagan Ranch for high school students. This is an indoctrinating organization that gets high school students to think conservative thoughts and, you know, dump on the permanently poor. The phrase, the theme of Young America's Foundation is, get this, the conservative movement starts here. And one of their stated goals is to combat affirmative action and feminism.
Yeah.
So a school system that has no money to do any programming for schools that can have a free speaker come at no expense to them whatsoever is going to be glad to do it until they read the fine print and find out the speaker is going to dump on poor people.
Right. But it's content.
And then that plays right into Ben Shapiro, because this is all over Breitbart.
Exactly. That
the politically correct fascists on the left that have already infected colleges and universities across the country are now infecting high schools.
Right. Because
you
can't get that message on any AM radio anywhere in the country, any time of the day or night.
Yeah.
But this really does raise that much larger issue, which is a constant one, and for which I don't have an answer, which is the fact that there is other than, you know, our incredibly kind and generous listeners support us tremendously and for which we are very grateful. Other than those good people and good people like that who support, you know, liberal podcasts, liberal writers and so forth, and a few bylined writers, there is no liberal media in this country anymore.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, Ben Shapiro doesn't have to pay his electric bill $5 at a time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, in Illinois, let me give you a really concrete local example. There's an outfit called the Illinois Policy Institute.
Same thing.
Same thing. The Illinois Policy Institute is a conservative, libertarian, free market, limited government thingy that last year had a budget of $3 million and revenue of $3.4 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's an organization that Bruce Rauner had contributed to heavily and from whom he drew a lot of his policy people to help destroy the Illinois economy. They have a sister organization, the Liberty Justice Center, which, of course, you can tell. You can just see an eagle holding an AK-47 as their logo, which is all about liberty and justice. Then they have the Illinois News Network, which is a network of hacks who crank out right-wing articles, but it's generating free content. That's the point. Ben Shapiro is giving the high school free content. I will give you a speaker for nothing.
Yep.
And all you have to do is let me in the door. Yep. Illinois Policy Institute will give you free policy papers, free white papers, free research. All I have to do is sign the dotted line. The Illinois News Network will give your newspaper written and spell-checked articles on a wide variety of crazy right-wing topics that you can just plug into your newspaper. You can fire all the reporters you want. Just get rip and read your stuff from us. It's because there is an enormous amount of money on the right that is devoted to making sure that think tanks and newspapers and policy shops and podcasts and Ben Shapiro's and Ben Dominic's never miss a fucking meal, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
those people are then free. This is something that reminds me of a discussion we were having about Thomas Jefferson the other day, about the basic entrepreneurial greatness of Jefferson and how we miss discussing, this is a little bit of misdiscussing slavery in the past. The reason Jefferson could tinker around and play is because he had several hundred human beings who were devoted to providing him with sustenance,
right,
food, shelter, etc.
Income.
Income.
His farms weren't. He didn't go out and hoe for his tobacco farming. No.
He was freed. The white male landowners who founded this country had a lot more time on their hands to think great big thoughts because there were indentured servants who were in charge of making sure that they had everything they needed.
And slaves, yes.
And exactly. And I'm believing I'm not drawing a parallel here. I am saying that the enormous amount of money that the right is willing to put into Ben Dominic and Ben Shapiro and the Illinois Policy Network and Alec and on and on and on almost indefinitely to prop them up lets them compete on a playing field that is radically slanted in their direction.
Absolutely.
Because they don't have to worry about missing a meal. Ben Dominic can say whatever the fuck he wants. He can write articles that will be linked everywhere. He can spew whatever bullshit he wants. He knows that if he starts to slip, his good friend Chris Hayes will prop him back up again. If he really
stops, he can go off to the think tank in D.C. Yeah. and draw a salary. Yeah.
And that's always there. That is their safe. That's why we call it wingnut welfare. It's mm-hmm. a system that keeps them running. There is absolutely no such thing on the left. The thing that makes it frustrating is if it were sports writing or movie reviews or whatever, about which you can have differences of opinion and differences of taste, then fine. You have a whole variety of writers that disagree or agree or whatever. But in this case, you have essentially a cadre of writers on the left who have been right about the economy, who have been right about Iraq, who are right about George Bush, and who are right about conservatives for the last 30 years, who cannot beg, who are essentially blacklisted,
yep.
who cannot beg, borrow, or steal their way into a byline anywhere. And that is deliberate. That's on purpose. Cokie Roberts will never miss a meal. Peggy Noonan will never, ever have to worry about anything again in her life. David Brooks is going to pass along millions and millions and millions of dollars to his children.
Mm-hmm.
And they are essentially worthless hacks who contribute nothing except to perpetuate the delusion that this is somehow both sides.
Both sides. And also, I really think that this is about preserving wealth for the people that are supporting this. So it's fossil fuels.
Yep.
It's keeping pharma private.
Defense.
Defense and tobacco. Yep. And it's interesting. I was talking with a local person and talking with them about investments and so forth. And he was a banker type. And he said, well, you know, I said, my husband and I are pretty ethical about what we would want to put our money in if we had any money.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, does that include tobacco? I mentioned fossil fuels and I mentioned war machines. Does that include tobacco too? Because, you know, a lot of people invest in these. They're now highly diversified companies, but they still,
sure.
RJ Reynolds still does tobacco. And I said, well, yeah, but they're really diversifying away from that, aren't they? And he said, not in the third world, they're not.
Nope.
And I went, oh. Yeah. So, no. Yeah, I mean, and so it's about, you know, no one on the right is going to ever suggest a ban on the export of cigarettes, even though we know they in this country they kill people and we have smoke-free zones everywhere and you're not allowed to smoke in public buildings in practically every state. You're never going to not export those cancer sticks to the third world. Of course you do. So it's about money. I mean, it's plain and simple about money.
And we can't beat that. I mean, we can beat them at the ballot box. We can beat them ideologically. But I'm not saying we're going to lose. I'm saying we're so wildly overmatched at this point that it's not even funny. I mean, we have basically, you know, the John Stewart approach. We'll make fun of them. But we can't match them. We can't match them $1 for every $100,000 they spend.
Yeah, I mean, John Stewart, if those first responders from 9/11 didn't have John Stewart, they'd be in the toilet.
They'd be dead. I mean, many of them would literally be dead.
Voice, because watching that video on The Daily Show this week where Freedom Energy got a seat, you know, got a meeting right while John Stewart was recording. You know, we're from Freedom Energy. Hey, John Stewart, how you doing? No, we're going right in.
Yeah, they'll talk to us.
I do want to go back to just a moment to South Carolina and just point out that South Carolina has 8 electoral votes.
Yeah.
Iowa has 7 mm-hmm. and New Hampshire has 4. And as I was taking notes about this, the Democratic candidate starts out with approximately between 211 and 216, depending on how you count them, electoral votes.
Unless something disastrous.
If we get hit with another 9/11, that might change. You know, enough people be afraid and vote crazy. But, you know, this idea, I don't know why the Republican Party does this, but why the primary calendar is so weighted toward tiny white states. except white supremacy, I guess that's it. Anti-city white supremacists write this calendar. So, and that, you know, this is the Democratic calendar too. This is the calendar for both parties. So why is it this way? And it bothers me, but I, I don't know what you do to change the primary calendar. But I want to keep it in perspective, too, and say, you know, when the reason, one of the things that the networks want to do is make this a continual horse race. When if you look at the Electoral College, it's not that much of a horse race unless something huge happens. So, yeah.
Well, that's why presidential elections are different.
Yeah. And this, no. And let's talk about Jeb Bush for a minute.
Well, I want to put a button on the it's all about the money. And
yeah. And, okay, go ahead and talk about that some more then.
It's just there. If it weren't about protecting the status quo, protecting mm-hmm. the establishment and money, there's no way MSNBC would clear a spot on schedule to plug in Mark fucking Halperin.
Yeah. Oh,
there's no way to just, and not even the Mark Halperin show, the Mark Halperin and John Heilman show, to just rerun what they're already doing.
Already doing on Bloomberg, of all places, Bloomberg.
Mark
yes.
Halperin, who sits, you know, on Donald Trump's lap.
If we didn't already have enough billionaire-sponsored media, we have Bloomberg, right? Yeah.
You know, Mark Halperin, who goes to the, you know, Pilates class that's being conducted
teaches
by...
a Pilates class for the Koch brothers, yeah.
And all of those things, who is so completely sold out, there's nothing human of him left to sell.
Well, can we share his tweet this week?
Sure.
He said, and I quote, "Whatever else happens, this will be an historic week in the campaign of at the real Donald Trump." And the responses to that tweet were just hilarious. "Great insight, Mark Halperin. I'm lonely. Send nudes." And then someone else said something to the effect of, "You know, you're even worse than Esquire Politics makes you out to be."
Really? You're an awful... Well, and the one that cracked you up was my favorite as well.
Yeah? Which one was that?
Afghanistan. Land of contrast.
In other news, Afghanistan, a land of contrast. Yeah.
And
that
really,
did crack me up. And then someone else tweeted on a separate tweet, "The reason John Heilman is on that show is the hat rack asked for more money."
Yeah.
That was a good one. There are some funny people on Twitter.
I mentioned that the reason it's called, with all due respect, is because Between Two Ferns was taken. It really is the most useless piece of establishmentarian, beltway groveling bullshit on the air, on the radio, anywhere. And MSNBC has pried open an hour in its daily schedule to rerun the wit and wisdom of Mark fucking Halper because it's about the money. It's all it's about. It's about conservatives and centrists and money. And they are colluding together to wreck your country.
Yeah.
And that's and so there is
for
no
money and send your kids to war for money. Yep.
And that's it. It's really not a whole lot. And there is something really kind of, in a weird way, refreshing that Donald Trump has essentially taken all the crazy shit, all the freak show, sadistic black shirt bullshit that's always been just below the surface. That's been hiding right behind that David Brooks fig leaf and slapped it right on the table and said, "This is who we are. Now let's have a discussion about whether or not we want to be that country or this country." And watching the Beltway douchebags completely freak out and try to find, I mean, they're clawing their own eyes out rather than look at what's right in front of their face. And so you have Ben Dominic on blaming Barack Obama. And then you have Jeb Bush yesterday or today saying that it was possible that Donald Trump was in cahoots with Hillary Clinton to make the Republican Party look bad. No, it's, you know what's more possible, Jeb? That your party is full of fascists and has been for decades. And you don't know
Who takes what Donald Trump said and follows it up with a poll supporting Donald Trump and doesn't take it the next step, which Rachel Maddow did, and said, "Look, the Republican Party is full of racists and fascists."
Mm-hmm.
If you just say, "Well, you know, the polls say Donald Trump's still winning and it's still working. This message is working for him." You're a collaborator.
Right.
And I'm going to use the Nazi term. You are a collaborator.
Absolutely.
If you just say, "Well, it's working for him politically, you know, so what are we going to do?"
And, you know, really, Bernie Sanders is a lot like that.
It's both sides.
Both sides of this. And
You're a collaborator if you say that. Absolutely.
You're going to get the audio drop in from the Diane Reams show, aren't you? Maybe not this week. But,
you know, we want to thank everyone who sent us that on the media show.
Uh-huh.
Our dear friend from Chicago, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Rick Perlstein. Is interviewed in the second half of this On the Media show. And your mother sent this to us as well.
You did. A
whole bunch of people said, oh, you have to listen to this. And Rick Perlstein, that's in the second half of that show, talked about how being called out for using the word liar.
Right.
And when you have a journalistic rule that everyone's opinion and statements are completely equally valid, and the host is simply going to take a view from nowhere that doesn't judge anyone and lets both sides talk, mm-hmm. and one side is lying, the side that's lying wins.
Right. Period.
Period. And, Rick Perlstein had to say, I'm really sorry to say this, but it was on a public radio show that I got called out for using the word liar.
And it was the Diane Rehm show.
And it was Diane Rehm who just chided Rick Perlstein.
He was debating Grover Norquist.
Grover Norquist.
And they were debating over, you know, whether or not Grover Norquist wants to get rid of Social Security, which he
does,
and Medicare, which he does.
Grover Norquist does want to scrap, you know, make government drown in a bathtub. That includes Social Security and Medicare. But on the Diane Rehm show, which, you know, he tailors it to his audience every time.
Right. As so they all said, do.
You know, that's not what I really mean. You know, of course not. We don't want to leave elderly people in the streets, but we have to be responsible.
And let's just say that's a rule, too. I mean,
that's a rule, too. Yes,
it
is.
What Mark Halperin or Ben Dominic tweet or write about is never brought up when they're being interviewed, when they're part of a panel.
Right.
You know, never.
And what Hugh Hewitt says on his radio program never winds up on Joe Scarborough.
No one ever. And Chuck Todd never asks him about it.
Calls him on it. No.
Never mentions it. It never mentions there is such a radio show, except in passing. And so there's this fake wall, I believe it used to be called the Chinese wall, between what your wingnut cohorts and collaborators do the rest of the day and what you're willing to talk to them about, what you mention. And this is the Gingrich rule. It's however horrifying Newt Gingrich is, 6 days a week. On the seventh day, he'll be invited on Meet the Press and no one will mention the thing, and suddenly he'll have his reputation back. That's the way the system works. So Rick Perlstein is on the Diane Rehm show.
And he uses the L word. He says lying. He's lying.
And Diane goes, Rick,
please don't use that term on my program.
And you can hear the clickety clack of her clutching her pearls and the little squishy sound it makes when she hit her fainting couch. But it was, oh my God, don't use language like that on my show. Oh, Rick, you can't say things like that.
Yeah.
And of course you can't, because then you give the game away. Then you're actually asking journalists to do journalism.
Yeah.
And that's not their job anymore.
And adjudicate what is true or not. And who asked we don't know what truth or lying is anymore?
Right.
Mark Halperin.
Right. And who said it's not my job anymore? Chuck Todd. The host of the most widely rated and respected by people who don't know any better, Sunday Morning Public Interest Show, says it's not his job to call out people who are lying to him on the air. It's just not his job. You see, my listeners are smart enough. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
No, you're a collaborator, Todd. You should have your head
shaped. Now you're a collaborator. Yep.
Meanwhile, back in Chicago.
Yeah. Finish up with this. Let's finish up with this.
Well, I just want to mention, I talked about this a little bit last week, and I might actually write a post about it. As everyone knows, Rahm Emanuel has resigned, or not resigned. That's 2 weeks from now. As everyone knows, Rahm Emanuel apologized and pretended to have empathy for Laquan McDonald being shot, being murdered by the Chicago Police Department, and that murder being covered up. I want to reemphasize the fact that I know I talked about this last week, that Rahm Emanuel does not have the structural support or the money or the deep family ties that Richie Daley, R2-D2, as we used to call him, Daley II, had to protect himself from similarly career-ending crises. He doesn't have the Stroger family. The Daleys owned the Stroger family. The Stroger family were the people who ran the Cook County Board, and they protected the Daleys. They were tools of the Daley family. Rahm Emanuel does have his pals with Mike Madigan. There is no structural method for a city council to remove the mayor of the city of Chicago, because I'm pretty sure that Eddie Vrdoljak would have gotten rid of Harold Washington if that were a possibility. But right now it looks like Rahm Emanuel might not survive this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because he has no money to throw it at the problem. He can't bribe his way out of it. There's nobody there. There's no aldermen who are going to throw themselves on a political grenade to save his ass.
Mm-hmm.
People hate him. And he's an asshole. He's been an asshole forever. And he's an outsider. You know, his daddy didn't run the city. He doesn't know, you know, he can't tell you ward by ward who the priests are and the pastors are, who runs the boxing league.
What the WPA roads were. Yeah, I mean, that's what Richie Daley could do, as you told me many times.
Yeah, he grew up there. He knew the shit inside and out. He knew everybody. And he knew them from when he was a kid.
Are there any Daleys in the pipeline?
He's got a son who may or may not be coming up, but not really. I don't know who in their right mind. Chewy Garcia should get the job. I mean, the guy who ran against...
Well, everyone has said that, but that... Doesn't that become another Harold Washington then? I don't mean that to be nasty. I mean it in terms of reality of Chicago politics is that there is white supremacy in the city, in the police force, in the city government. And if you are outside of that and you succeed in being elected, they will attempt to destroy you. Well, now, that sounds just like what we're talking about with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, and the next 8 years, if she is the nominee and if she's elected. Right.
Let me just say that Toni Preckwinkle is, I believe, a lady who likes other ladies and a fairly incorruptible liberal Democrat is the president of the Cook County Board.
Okay.
So she got elected to a position that the Strogers held by hook or by crook, mostly by crook, for 40 years and has reformed it to a certain
degree. Okay.
There are no aldermen who owe anybody any, very few aldermen who are owe anybody allegiances anymore. There are plenty of Hispanic aldermen. There's plenty of black aldermen. It's now diverse enough that I don't think you can round up 26 or 24 or 23 white aldermen with Polish, Germanic, and Irish last names.
Yeah.
Stand in a wall between Harold Washington and everything Harold wanted to do.
You know, that's kind of the irony of Reagan destroying the unions, is that it left a vacuum for non-white political activists to come in and do the work and walk the walk and do the precinct work to represent people. And you know, that's why I think Black Lives Matter is so important, is it's an organizing principle that gets people motivated. And that's another reason I think Rahm Emanuel is on his way out.
Yeah.
Is the zeitgeist of cities in this country right now is that there is a moral, and I mean that in the religious sense, a moral force behind Black Lives Matter that says this is morally wrong what is happening in our cities.
It's unfair to take a swipe at Occupy, because they did some good things and they got...
And they are still doing some good things in terms of banking and buying debt and so forth. And they've just gone smaller with their goals. But yeah, they didn't organize the way that they could have.
They didn't organize the way the Tea Party did. Black Lives Matter and the protests that are happening in Chicago and the I will also say the immigration protests.
And around the country. Black Lives Matter is nationwide.
Yeah.
You know.
But I mean, specifically in Chicago, there are specific calls to action. There's specific deliverables they want. They're not going to wiggle their fingers up and wiggle their fingers down and procedurally make themselves look like buffoons. They're not sitting around huge circles for 18 hours a day deciding whether or not you're too much of an insider to be allowed a voice in our community. Bullshit.
Yeah.
No, they're not doing that. They have real clear things that they'd like to have happen. Now, one of them was getting rid of the chief of police, and he's gone. The idea that they could pressure the mayor of the city of Chicago out of office 50 years ago was ridiculous. I mean, would have been ridiculous. You know, Richard Daley, you know, the daddy, the patriarch of the tribe, had hippies beaten in the streets in Chicago on camera during the 1968 convention. Yeah. And fuck you, I'm not going anywhere.
Yep. And he was reelected. No problem.
He was reelected until he died. And then there was a brief interregnum where people said, hey, people have some reform. Oh, fuck, here comes his son. There is no way you can muster that kind of solid patronage-based political support. And Rahm Emanuel just doesn't have it in him. So I'm betting the feds are going to pry him loose or he'll find a graceful way to exit. I cannot imagine him sort of holding out for three more years or however much longer his term is, because these people aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And yeah. Chicago
well,
is not getting
any
better.
Well, and this problem isn't going to go anywhere.
The exactly.
problem with the police department is structural. And I did find it interesting that Rahm Emanuel welcomed the FBI into the city to investigate the police department.
Sure.
Because that's the best he can do in terms of what you said last week, in terms of like having some sort of czar take over
right.
the investigation.
Right.
And then anytime anyone asks you about it, you say, well, that's an ongoing FBI investigation. I really can't comment on that.
Talk to
and
my
it's
chief
not
of staff
his problem anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is his problem, and everybody knows it's his problem. So
there's really no place for him to go.
Yeah.
And now, mind you, the worst that's going to happen to him is he'll end up making $20 million a year as a consultant.
Of course.
His future is set, but his, you know, as the mayor of the city of Chicago, as mayors go, he's going to go down as a shitty one.
Was this sort of, do you think, his dream job? That's what everyone says, that this was his dream job, was to be mayor of the city of Chicago. That's where he wanted to top off his career.
He could have anything he wanted. He was a congressman. He was chief of staff for the Obama White House. He was head of the DNC. He could pretty much name whatever he wanted. You know, the president of the United States is from Chicago and knows him and so forth. And he was a dick in every job he's ever held.
Yeah.
But he was a bundler. Remember, he started off his career as a fundraiser. And he's really good at muscling people with shitloads of money to give to the institutional Democratic Party.
Right.
And so he could name whatever job he wanted almost in or out of the administration. Nobody wants to be governor of Illinois.
Unless you can buy it and buy all your people and then close down the unions. If that's all you want to do, then
But the mayor, I think that's sort of, that was what he said was his lifelong sort of childhood dream. That's a weird, okay. And now he is. And it turns out, you inherited a shitty system full of corruption that was broke and desperately in need of reform. And you decided that instead of that, you'd start kicking the shit out of unions, shutting school down, and insulting everyone around you. So congratulations.
Hey, Drift Glass. Did you know that Dick Cheney came out against Trump and said, this isn't who we are as Americans? And I know you put that up, that he's the moral high ground of the Republican Party.
He's the conscience of the GOP.
Guess who else came out against Trump? You'll never guess.
Jesus, I don't know. The animated remains of Auguste Pinochet?
No, close.
Henry Kissinger.
Bibi Netanyahu.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, Bibi Netanyahu said, quote, in a statement issued by his office, the state of Israel respects all religions. And strictly guarantees the rights of all its citizens. Okay, this is just funny.
I don't think that word means what you think it means. You keep using that word, respect. I don't think it means what you think.
At the same time, Israel is fighting against militant Islam that targets Muslims, Christians, and Jews alike, and threatens the entire world.
Sure.
And then he went on to say on Twitter that, because I don't know if you know that Donald Trump was going to go to Israel until Bibi said this, and now he's canceled his trip. Netanyahu said on Twitter that it's the policy of his office to hold a meeting with any presidential candidate, any U.S. presidential candidate that travels to Israel and asks for a meeting, because we believe in the American Israel relationship. So we will have a sit down with any presidential candidate who travels to Israel and asks for a meeting with the prime minister. Yes, we'll do a photo op with that.
Which is hilarious, because Bibi Netanyahu is Donald Trump.
He is.
The Muslims love me. They love me. The Muslims love me. And what am I most known for? A huge wall. A beautiful, huge wall.
Huge. I built the huge wall and the Palestinians paid for it. Yeah.
Yep, it's so true.
God damn it.
He is Donald Trump. And he'd rather not, I suppose. Maybe they can't
associate.
Be in the same room.
Maybe he wants to try not to associate with that.
Maybe they can't be in the same room together because they're the same person.
Oh, Lord.
Maybe that's the issue.
And Thank you, Drift Glass.
And speaking of David Brooks.
No, we don't have time, honey.
I will simply say David Brooks wrote an entire column outlining how ISIS grows extremists.
Okay.
Cannot distinguish between the characteristics of ISIS extremism and the characteristics of the basic Republican voter.
Yeah.
It is.
If you replace the word ISIS with GOP base,
uh-huh.
It's the same.
And yeah. David Brooks.
And David Brooks doesn't see that.
Will yeah. not see that. Yeah. And that's what made it
la,
art.
La, la, la. Okay.
Made it absolute art.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Emma. And Emma is sitting in the bathroom sink. She looks like she just had a drink of water. So good for her. She's a beautiful kitty. She's, of course, a rescue, and we love her. And you can visit her at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We need some more internet kitties. Thank you. The call is going out. Thank you very much. You can also write to both of us at that email address. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Especially this time of year. Thanks for all you do, Postal Unions. Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself this winter, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link. If your alternative is a big box store, be aware if you go to our website, click on our link, and shop at Amazon and pay for it, it worked. I can't go and track orders from before midnight ever. It's just too much work. So,
yeah.
But trust me, if you do it that way, it works. And we deeply appreciate your doing that. We heard from a listener who wrote in to say, "Hey guys, I love your podcast. And as an occasional street performer myself, I am very supportive of the hat pass. Nothing beats getting a $20 bill. Well, getting $100 does. Because you know that person must have really felt you were worth it. You guys definitely are. I'll keep listening as long as you keep podcasting. My fiance and I have an acrobatic comedy show called Acrobatrix. Please like us on Facebook," which I did. And they have some very funny videos of them doing things. I mean, she stands up on his shoulders and hands and flips and does all kinds of things. And they have a lot of videos on their Facebook page of them messing up, which is fun. It takes a lot of rehearsal to do that. But we really appreciate your contribution and your kind words. Thank you very much. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our postal address and email address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio by giving us a thumbs up on Stitcher. And thank you for doing that. I want to give a shout out to Netroots Radio, which plays our podcast every week. And now we have a new place that's going to do that.
Red State?
No, not Red State.
Clear Channel?
Clear Channel. Wouldn't that be fun?
We're on right after Rush, right before Mark Levin, 5 to 7, 3 nights a week.
Our podcast is also going to be posted at a website called blogtalkusa.com.
Oh.
And they're going to start, I think, next week, putting our latest episode up every Monday morning at 9:15 a.m. Central Time. I don't expect people that already have a way to listen to us every week to switch over. But if you want to go look at more progressive audio, you might go over to blogtalkusa.com. They have a very established website over there. They asked if they could post our podcast, and we said sure. So grateful to have anyone who's established and progressive and wants to use our content. My only request when I say yes to that sort of thing is that they run the entire show in its entirety rather than clip it up. So very grateful for anyone that wants to do that. Thank you. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the internet kitties' tinsel poop is proof that they are winning the war on Christmas.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogfaced Herman has sent us some more bad science in science fiction, Driftglass.
Yay!
Yeah, we love this stuff. You have to identify the movie or TV show and then tell us why is it bad science.
Gotcha.
Here's number one.
So we're their victims, all of us who don't have a family or people who would miss us.
I don't understand the reason for it.
He has a formula with which he obtains perfect copies of the paintings he's given to restore. So you see, he needs women.
What for?
They inject us every day with a chemical that produces a tumor, which it seems they need for making the formula.
But that's horrible. That means that all of you...
Yes, we're all sick. Just waiting for our time to come. When 5 months are up, we're exterminated.
But the man's a monster. What do you think they've done with Susan? Do you think they've found out she belongs to Interpol? They might have murdered her.
No, not even in that case would they waste a woman.
I have no idea at all. I'm guessing it's either, well, it's dubbed. That's pretty
it's clear. Dubbed, yes.
We can begin with that. It doesn't sound right, because a Dr. Fibes movie would not be dubbed. It would be Vincent Price, but it has that vibe to it. Or some sort of late 60s espionage movie gone horribly wrong. The science, I have no idea what tumors from ladies have to do with art.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing that is, I mean, that's so... Like,
that's exactly right. Wrong. Yeah, that's exactly why it's bad science. This is a movie called El Santo versus Dr. Death from 1973. El Santo, the wrestler. It's the masked wrestler.
Okay, all right. So I'm all in now. I gotta see this movie. Oh.
Yeah, Dr. Death is an expert in art restoration and an evil scientist. He has his henchmen break into museums and throw his special acid onto famous paintings. The effects...
Special acid was used at some point in this movie.
Not the kind you're thinking about. The effects of the acid are only temporary, but the museum curators don't know that, so they send the paintings to Dr. Death for restoration. Hey, Dr. Death, restore our priceless painting. Would you send a painting to Dr. Death? I don't
sure.
think so.
If
anyway.
The plot told me to, sure.
Sure. And he makes forgeries from the made from the tumors he's collected from the women he abducts.
Oh, okay.
And then he sends the forgeries back to the museum and keeps the original for himself. And the tumors apparently kill the women, you know, because there has to be a woman in peril in these movies.
Sure. Well, and everyone knows... In science, first of all, it's not a tumor. had to do that. Thank you very much. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger, Kindergarten Cop. And everyone knows that if you're going to turn tumors into art, both genders work equally well.
It's oh, not, I see. Yeah. Well, unfortunately for Dr. Death, El Santo and Interpol are on the case.
Together yeah. again.
Dogfaced Herman says he is going to name his punk band Tumor Goya.
Oh.
Yeah, I like that. Okay.
I would like to point out that the theft of great art and the secret replication of it and selling it, selling the forgeries is the beginning of the final problem, which is a Sherlock Holmes, very famous Sherlock Holmes story.
Yes.
Where he's finally directly on the trail of Professor Moriarty.
See.
So
so is El Santo, apparently.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There you go. All right, number two.
Wilson, when we tried to pick up Shaw's message, what interfered at this end?
Well, the background noise in this room, sir.
And what stopped it?
You did, sir. You told them all to be quiet.
Exactly.
California reports condition silent, now in force.
Mississippi calling. All stopped.
Roger, Colorado. Good work.
Colorado found the trouble. They're going off now.
Can we hear from Vermont and Texas? What's the delay?
Vermont's on the line. They've located the quarry blasting. Expect to go silent in 10 minutes.
Good.
It looks good. Very good.
Are you picking up the tunnels? Yeah. This is it. Switch over to visual on the big board up above.
Underground noise moving east. direction 070.
One of their tunnel bores.
Or a bomb trailer moving through.
Mm. My God, they're everywhere.
Okay, this is hilarious. I have no idea, but I'm really eternally grateful to Dogface Herman for bringing these gems to my attention. I'm guessing Mole or Mole People or Attack of the Mole Men is somewhere in the title. The science is reminds me of what Middle Child, her first tweet was to the world. Everybody better shut up.
Yeah, that was her first tweet, Middle Child's first tweet. Everybody better shut up. Yeah.
I don't think telling everyone to keep it down up there or I'll pull this planet over affects the ability to read seismic activity in the Earth at all.
No.
So I'm guessing that's the big science problem among all the many little science problems that clearly are here.
Dogface Herman writes, Battle Beneath the Earth, 1967. Everyone shut up. I'm trying to hear the Chinese dig under the ground like ants. So, yes, that is it. Everyone shut up is the bad science in that movie.
I hear them dig, and it's the Chinese, is it?
Apparently, yes. I'm going to put this drinking glass on the floor. Everyone shut up. I want to hear the Chinese digging underground. Okay.
I hear them with their bombs, with their radioactive bombs.
I know you're going to get this next one, Dirk Glass. At least get the source. Number three.
Scotty, we're still off course.
I'll be right up.
Speed, Mr. Chekhov.
We're moving at warp 8.
And new course?
403 Mark 7. Straight for the Cossack if there is no let up.
Yay! We're back to TV from my childhood. This would be Star Trek.
Right. Let's just call it generic episode Star Trek.
Okay. Generic episode Star Trek. Other than you can't travel faster than the speed of light, I'm kind of, I'm missing it. If there's something there, then I'm missing it.
Dr. Sherman says, space is three-dimensional. Saying 403 Mark 7 can't be a point in space unless the next line is, you sunk my battleship.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yes, you clever dog. You clever dog face Herman, you. That's quite true. Yes,
all right.
Yes. That happens so often, I just sort of forgot.
You listen right through it, and the writers know that, so they don't make it. Yeah. All right. Number four.
Touch and go there for a minute, but you're out of danger now. You're aboard the Starship Enterprise.
I've heard of it. It's in the United Fleet of Planets.
Federation.
I'm grateful for your rescue.
Don't mention it. We're pleased to have caught you. Who are you?
My name is Lokai.
Go on.
From the planet Charon.
That's in the southernmost part of the galaxy. In an uncharted quarter.
That is the only episode of Star Trek ever made in black and white. No.
Oh, that's, well.
that's the episode where Frank Gorshin found work, which is great because I like that. Mm-hmm. It was the thing where they're half black and half white, but they're perfectly symmetrically half black and half white.
Right.
Which is genetically impossible for that to continue more than a couple of generations, I would imagine. And so that's plot driven because that was all about America's racial tension and civil rights and student protest tension because there was, you know, the bad guys didn't want to change anything ever. The good guys wanted it. Or the other side wanted to change everything right away. And can't we find a nice middle centrist ground for that? So genetically, it doesn't make a goddamn bit of sense, but that's just plot. The second thing is I'm really, really sure that the galaxy doesn't have a south to it.
Exactly. Yep. lots of planets have a north, but no galaxy that anyone knows of has a south. Correct. And it is Let That Be Your Last Battlefield from 1969, Star Trek, the original series. Okay.
It was a bad episode.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not going to lie. It was a
bad episode. It is memorable for its social message at the time. It really does encapsulate a lot of what was in the zeitgeist in 1969. Okay. Number five.
We acknowledge the arrival of two of the world's most distinguished scientists, Admiral Nelson and Commodore Emery. And now the chair will listen to Admiral Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, distinguished scientists, ladies and gentlemen, this planet is impaled on a roasting spit, slowly but inexorably being seared and blistered by the fire in the sky. If the Van Allen belt continues to burn, the world will burn with it. And no one can doubt that civilization as we know it will disintegrate if the temperature should rise to 175 degrees.
Well, if it's Admiral Nelson, then it's Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
That is correct. 1961. Yes. 1961.
Secondly, last time I checked, the Van Allen belt wasn't a bunch of dry wood chips floating in space with someone throwing lighter fluid on them and flicking matches at them.
That is correct. As
not set fire to the Van Allen belt. Unless you're talking about the disco Van Allen belt in the 70s in Chicago, where I said, no, that never happened.
You never played pool while the Van Allen belt played in the background? No.
No. There was no Van Allen belt disco. I didn't burn up the dance floor. That's just me lying. I couldn't help myself.
So the Van Allen belt.
You can't set fire to the goddamn Van Allen belt. So.
Yes, and Doc Face Herman says, the Van Allen belt is made up of radioactive particles held in place by Earth's magnetic field. It is not a ring of oily rags that light up at the first spark. Yes. Yeah. All right. And then we're going to listen to this one that Doc Face Sherman says, bonus clip for Bible Bitch. Okay. This is also Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Let's give it a listen.
All right.
There may be some here whose friends and loved ones have already gone to meet their maker. If it is God's will that they and we shall die, so be it. A joyous reunion can be only a brief moment away.
That's enough, Mr. Alvarez. That's more than enough. What kind of talk is this, anyway?
I only came to offer comfort.
Comfort? You offer defeatism. May I remind you, this is a federal ship, and these are federal seamen. By what right do you dare preach of imminent death, of meek resignation to the inevitable?
Captain,
nothing is inevitable except defeat for those that give up without a fight. I remind you to keep your sniveling philosophies to yourself. Now get forward and stay away from my men.
As you wish, Captain.
All right. Dogface Sherman says, I thought this scene was interesting because it reminds me that the idea of separating church from state was not a controversial one, and I would like to hear your thoughts on the changing attitudes of religion and politics. Well, I didn't hear that clip the way you did, I don't think, Dogface Sherman. Seems to me that's an argument. The argument and the tension in that scene is that the preacher man is arguing for the inevitability of death, and the general slash soldier is saying, we don't need defeatism, we need to fight. And yeah, regardless of what's going to happen, we don't need anyone to predict we're going to lose. But the other thing about church-state issues in the late 50s and 60s is, you know, Christianity was very much wrapped up in government and politics to defeat the Russians in the Cold War. That's, you know, the era in which, in the early 50s, I believe it was, you know, it under God was added to the Pledge of Allegiance because to separate us from the communists. And our being a God-fearing nation was a big part of our national identity vis-a-vis the godless communists. So everybody from Eisenhower on used God language to defeat the commies. Okay.
Yeah. And well, and I would just add to your excellent summary that even Lincoln talked about both sides praying to the same God. And Lincoln invoked God a lot during the Civil War. And it's not at all uncommon. I forget who said it. Probably the West Wing. You can say there's no religious test in the Constitution.
But if you don't end your speech with "God bless the United States of America," you're not going to get elected president. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's absolutely true.
Not vote for you, period. So yeah, that's just the way it goes.
Sad to say.
I would like you to mention why we keep religion and state. The purpose of doing that is to keep religion strong.
Yes.
I mean, you're a member of...
AU, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. See, we're finishing each other's sentences now.
You're a card-carrying member of...
We are card-carrying members of the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Great organization. And a lot, you know, run by a minister, Barry Lynn. So, yeah, it keeps religion strong to keep it from being watered down by political propaganda. And, yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Thank you, Dog-Faced Herman. And one last thing, I did want you to know, did you hear about Barack Obama's favorite movie of the year? Michelle Obama's favorite movie was Inside Out.
Bless her heart.
Yes. So what do you and Barack Obama may actually have the same favorite movie of the year.
Oh, The Martian.
Yep.
Gotta be.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so nerd. It appeals to the nerd in all of us.
Yes.
And it's such a really very hopeful, in the sense that Star Trek showed us that we had a future and it was interesting and it was humane and people got along. That movie does this, but it's hyper realistic and really cool. And it's about an ordinary guy solving really hard problems and everybody getting behind him and rooting for him to succeed. And I can totally see why Barack Obama would think that's the best movie of the year. I would agree. It did not, I think I mentioned this before when we talked about it on the podcast, it did not have the same propulsive power to pull you through. It wasn't as fast-paced as the book, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, you said that because you read the book in 2 days.
I did. I blew through it, which I never do. Now, I'm still working my way through books I started months or a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are just a slog. This one was just blazed through it. And they cut substantial parts of the book. They didn't kill the plot, but they had to cut big chunks of the book, at least one really big chunk of the book, out to make it fit. And it was a wonderful read and a great movie. And I salute your excellent taste in cinema.
Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Harrison Ford. He has this new movie coming out next week, next Friday.
Yeah. The Mosquito Coast 2.
The Mosquito Coast 2. That's it. That's the one. Yeah.
The mosquitoing. Yes.
Mosquito. Yeah. He's going to be in this movie called Star Wars something or other.
Yeah, that other.
But anyway, he was asked by a reporter in, you know, one of these promo interviews for Star Wars. Apparently Donald Trump has said that he really liked Air Force One. And Harrison Ford looked at the camera and said, "Donald, it's a movie. It's not like this in real life. But how would you know?"
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first.
Han Solo dissed Donald Trump.
Hand shot first.
Hand shot first, baby. All
period.
Right.
Mic drop. We're done.
We're done. Thank you very much, Driftglass. I love you.
My pleasure. Love you too, darling.